RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Monday morning at RCR is Health Hacks Morning. Dr. Glenn Davies from reversalnz.co.nz back with me. Hi, Glenn. Good to see you again.
Paul, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure for me too. You're looking healthy. How do I look?
Because people, you look a picture of health. Absolutely fantastic.
Okay, that's me for another year. All right, we were talking about iron last program. That was really interesting, by the way. And you said that we'd be looking at eczema next time round. This is it next time round. So eczema. So what is eczema exactly? What is it?
Okay, so if you're just looking at the skin, then it's dry, red, inflamed, cracked, itchy skin, depending on how old you are, but sort of in younger children and teenagers, you'll often see it in the front of the elbow or behind the knees. But in babies, it can be, you know, dramatically widespread and, you know, sort of cover their whole body and can be horrible when it's really bad.
Yeah, that's alarming. I haven't had that experience with any of my kids. One of my daughters did have a kind of an eczema problem for about 10 years, probably. And then it started to ease off. Is that a normal thing? Just naturally?
Yeah, well, really interesting question. You know, your question, what is eczema? I think when we're looking at the underlying cause, eczema is inflammation or allergy or both. And I'd really like people to think about it in a different way. So think about inflammation as the underlying issue, and it can manifest in different ways in different organs. So if that inflammation manifests on the skin, that might be eczema. If that inflammation manifests in the joints, that would be arthritis. If it manifests in the lungs, that would be asthma. In the bowel, that might be irritable bowel syndrome or constipation. In the bladder, you know, it might manifest as urine frequency. Or in the brain, think about brain fog or irritability or, you know, even a psychiatric condition. So the concept is that the underlying problem is inflammation and it's manifesting in different ways. So the things that we're going to talk about for eczema is sort of, it's also relevant whether we're talking about irritable bowel syndrome or we're talking about asthma or arthritis.
So it's fundamentally the same thing, just in different parts of the body, external, internal. So if it's the same thing, how do certain areas of the body, why are they affected and not others? Is that like an individual thing? Is that down to the individual?
Yes, yeah, it is. But it's like a really important way to think about things, because medicine gets divided up into all these specialties, doesn't it? And we have cardiologists and respiratory physicians and dermatologists, and they're all looking at, you know, expertly at their particular area. But it really comes back to the general practitioner, for example, who's looking at the whole person. And it's really us that goes, oh, this person's got eczema and constipation and fatigue and irritable bowel. You know, could it be the same condition underlying it? And it is. And when we fix that underlying condition, it's not just the eczema that goes away, it's the asthma that goes away. And people say, I didn't realize I was irritable all the time, or I didn't realize these abdominal pains weren't normal. You know, that's sort of the joy that I experience in working in this area.
I can imagine, yeah. So if you're a dermatologist or whatever the skin specialty is, then you're just looking at that, really. You're really kind of not considering anything else. You're just sort of focused on that, and you try and get rid of that appearance, and then job done kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not saying that the dermatologist wouldn't consider some of these other things, but your attention is directed at the skin, perhaps less intently looking at the underlying condition or the underlying cause. And as you all have noticed in this Health Hacks program, we're always looking for the cause of the cause of the cause. We're always, rather than treating the symptoms, which in the case of eczema might be putting some steroid cream on, why don't we look to see what's causing the inflammation? And if we deal with that, we're not just going to fix the eczema. We might also fix some of these other things, like the asthma, for example.
Yeah, and that would be good to fix that if you've got it as a problem. All right, so you mentioned what? Skin, joints, lungs, bowel, bladder, brain. So, okay, what are some of the common links there, the drivers?
Yeah, so
behind that inflammation, those inflamed areas of the body.
I just want to give you like a typical sort of pattern that I see quite often. So think of your breastfed baby, and the first thing that happens is the reflux, you know, the spilling.
Oh, yeah, so, I know that one, yeah.
You know, the few mils of breast milk that ends up on your shoulder when you're burping the baby.
Yep.
And then maybe the baby doesn't sleep as well as expected. And then the baby gets colic. So, you know, that horrible experience, usually between 6 weeks and 12 weeks, where the baby just doesn't settle, cries all the time. You know, I can remember being sent down to the surgery multiple times to get the thermometer, you know, and it was colic, and it kind of goes away. But what is colic? And, you know, surely that's not normal. And then the eczema comes, and then the constipation, and then eventually in the older child, asthma. You know, and we see these all as separate, independent issues, but that's a very, very typical pattern of dairy intolerance. You know, and so
right. Yep.
Okay. If we recognized that as dairy intolerance, instead of having a reflux medicine and a colic medicine and then a steroid cream and then some laxatives and then an asthma inhaler, what if we'd gone back and recognized this as dairy intolerance, treated the dairy intolerance, and we would have avoided all that distress for the parents and for the baby, but also all of those medicines, because we found the cause of the problem.
How common is dairy intolerance, particularly in kids? Because now I'm thinking back to what I had to deal with. We didn't have too much of a rocky road in that respect, but is that something that is it quite common?
It is quite common, and in some ethnic groups, it'll be more common. So, for example, if you're a Maasai African, you've probably well adapted to milk. But if you're Maori or Pacific Islander or possibly Asian, you may not have had that same exposure to milk and therefore be more likely to be allergic to it.
So, because they didn't have though that sort of agricultural dimension in their history is really what you're saying, is it?
Yeah. So I think if you look at Murray, for example, who at most would have had exposure to milk for 200 years, I don't think there's been enough time for that change to occur. And I think you're more likely to see a dairy intolerance in Murray than you are in the example I used, a Maasai African. So
you have been dealing with it probably for thousands of years.
Yes. Yeah. Well adapted to milk and drinking blood of cows.
Yeah, okay. So how do you... Okay, the skin eczema is pretty obvious, right? What are the telltale signs? Because there's like rashes and then there's next level, I'm picking.
Yeah. Well, I really think of these poor babies, you know, I'm thinking sort of around the age of 3 months old, and they're just covered from head to foot and... you know, in this red, itchy skin, and they're really, really irritable. You know, at times we're bandaging them so they can't, and putting gloves on them so they can't rip their skin. You know, it's really distressing, and it interferes with their sleep and, you know, their feeding. And that's about all that babies do, isn't it? Sleep and feed and coo and smile occasionally. So, you know, you're dealing with, you're interrupting a significant part of their development.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I suppose they kind of deal with it, do they? It's uncomfortable.
No, poorly in cases. And that's why I think it's an important, you know, it's an important issue to be looking at.
So is there any sort of like major health threat to that?
Well, there's a... there's a health threat to the parents, isn't it? Because it's already a pretty challenging time, and if your baby's not sleeping, then you're not sleeping, and I think there probably is. I expect that child who's had that level of distress at a young age, I guess that has an impact.
So is that dairy? Because that's quite young to be consuming dairy.
So what's interesting about that, in a breastfed baby, these allergens can get transferred through the breast milk. So if we're looking at exclusion diets, it's very easy for the breastfeeding mum to exclude the dairy and see if the symptoms go away. And I would say dairy is the commonest, but if you go to the next one, it'll be gluten. So gluten's in grains, wheat, barley, and rye. And then you'd also think of eggs and soy and nuts. So it's very easy for the breastfeeding mum to exclude those things and one at a time or collectively and see what happens.
Would you notice fairly quickly the difference?
I think you tend to notice in days, but a full formal exclusion is 3 weeks.
Okay, gotcha. And, takes that and long to get at, through, huh?
Hmm. Yeah, when you look at the science of that, there's IgE, immunoglobulin E, which is your immediate hypersensitivity reaction. So if you think of a child with a peanut allergy and they stick a peanut on their lip will immediately swell up. Or a bee sting is another example. That's IgE. But IgG, that's the delayed hypersensitivity reaction, and that can be delayed for up to 72 hours. So it might take 72 hours before you start to see an improvement. So I would say, it's a minimum of 72 hours, and you'll be absolutely sure at 3 weeks.
That thing you just described with the peanut, the instantaneous sort of reaction, how does that happen? I know it's a bit off on a tangent, but I'm curious, is there something in the sensors of the skin or the, that picks up on the stuff and immediately what feeds it into an immune response? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, what's happening is the immune cells are releasing histamine, and the histamine, so think of antihistamines, the histamine causes immediate inflammation. So that's the mechanism by which the peanut triggers the response. And if that histamine release is severe, and for example, in your throat, that could close the throat. If it's in your lungs, it's going to cause narrowing and asthma, for example.
I can see how it could be quite serious then, yeah. All right, moving on.
Right, so we what
gut?
Have we got?
We're in the gut.
Causes of eczema. Yeah, so number one cause, food allergy or sensitivity. And then, thinking about the gut and this common theme of the microbiome and gut dysbiosis, if you've got too many of the bad bugs and not enough of the good ones, that can cause this concept of leaky gut syndrome. I don't think we've talked about that before, but your skin is thousands of cell layers thick, but the skin lining the tube of your gut, surprisingly, is only one cell layer thick.
Really?
And it's joined together by these junctions, and those junctions can be damaged. And if they're damaged, then stuff can leak from the poo side into the immune system side.
Which you don't want happening, no.
You don't really want that. There's only one cell layer between your poo and your immune system, so we don't want that to break down. And if we inflame the gut or we damage the gut, then we break those links and we allow the antigens to leak through and contact the immune system. And that's why, we always think about the gut when we're seeing something like eczema or asthma. Is the gut healthy? And if it's not, or we suspect it might not be, then we would put attention into restoring that balance, and probiotic foods, fiber, avoiding sugar. Those are all the things we would think about healing the gut.
So that's a very thin layer, one cell. That's like microscopically thin, isn't it?
It's extraordinary. It's ridiculous when you think you don't want poo mixing with blood.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking.
Why is it only one cell layer? And the reason for that is to allow absorption, but you can see how there's a risk there, and you really don't want to be inflaming that very delicate thin layer.
Cell thicknesses would be still incredibly thin, but it would at least give you another, you know, layer of protection.
And, you know, you're thick-skinned, Paul, probably because you've had to become, you know, and that's thousands of cell layers thick, you know. I find it extraordinary that...
Is that some kind of design fault?
No, I think it's designed perfectly when we're living the ideal life, when we're eating a fully whole food diet, you know, high in fiber, we're avoiding sugar, there's no toxins. You know, it's perfect because you want to absorb as much of the zinc as you can and as much of the iron as you can, you know. But in this modern world we're living in and the food we're exposing ourselves to, I think it's a risky business.
And I suppose you can get multiple failures of that layer too, can you? Not just one location.
Yeah. And then if you think of these tight junctions, if they're leaking, no, then you've got a real problem.
Oh, dear. Okay. That's very, very thin, I would say, about that. Okay. So you talked about the biome and the probiotics. Is that the nutrient deficiency sort of area covered there?
Well, nutrient deficiency is a little bit different. You know, the nutrients, and we've talked about quite a lot of them, haven't we? Zinc and magnesium examples. You know, I think that's protective. You know, zinc is important for supporting your immune system. So if you were deficient, that could potentially lead to eczema because you don't have the protection. And then there's sort of a separate issue, which is contact dermatitis. For example, if you react to nickel and you've got a silver ring which contains nickel, you often see people with eczema under the ring. That's contact dermatitis. People who react to latex and can't wear latex gloves, for example, you know, so that example of contact dermatitis, and that's kind of easier because you just don't wear the ring or don't wear the earrings. Oh yeah, that's another common one. You know, the non-pure metal earrings often cause inflammation in the earlobe.
They get a little crusty around there. They can do.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and another one that's really fascinating, you'll often see this little round circle below the belly button of contact dermatitis, and it's from the dome, you know, the inside of the dome on a pair of jeans.
Oh, right, okay, which sort of sits about there, yeah, about that level.
Yeah, and people are really distressed by it, and you kind of know instantly exactly what it is. And it'll tend to happen more in the summer where you're not tucking your shirt in to have a layer of skin. Yeah.
Okay, so metals can have that effect as well. All right, so I think you talked about, in terms of we're up to treatment, I think you mentioned in relation to breastfeeding, that, you know, the exclusion, food exclusions. Is there more to say about, there are people who are not breastfeeding. So, you know, I guess they go through the same process, sort of elimination, is it?
Yeah, and I've probably said this lots of times, but the answer is usually in the history, and it's very seldomly in the examination and the special tests. So taking the history, you know, and when I'm talking to a parent and they say, my baby was fine while I was breastfeeding, and as soon as I weaned the baby onto the cow's milk formula, then the eczema started, or then the constipation started. You know, you don't have to go any further than that. You've got your answer. But then they might say, no, fine, when the baby was weaned, it was when I started solids. And you go, oh, what food did you start? And, you know, it was ferrix, for example, or it was a wheat, you know, a piece. When I started bread, you know, and you kind of go, ah, well, it's gluten, or, you know, so you can generally work it out. And, you know, you're often teenagers, you know, if their eczema starts at that stage, you know, oh, it was when I went flatting. And I started eating three pizzas every day, sort of thing.
It's kind
of
like, in other words. Okay.
It's the gluten.
So it's pretty obvious pretty quickly to you.
Sometimes.
Where the line has been crossed. Sometimes it
is. Yeah. Sometimes, but not always. And if it's not obvious, that's when you do these food exclusions. So I might say to someone, I want you to completely exclude dairy for 3 weeks and then see what happens. And if that doesn't make any difference, I want you to completely exclude gluten for 3 weeks, you know, and go through this process of dairy, gluten, egg, wheat, egg, nuts, soy. Those would be the five big ones. But sometimes we can't work it out, and that's when we might do some testing. And there's a variety of means of testing. One is a skin prick test, which is quite interesting, on the forearm. And you put a little, the lab does this, puts a little drop of the antigen, so like a gluten solution on there, and then they make a small needle prick through it. And then you measure the flare. So you measure how big the histamine welt is. And from that, you can often tell what people are reacting to. But there is a DIY method. You can say you're going, oh, I think I'm reacting to peanuts. What you do is get some peanut butter, stick it on your forearm, stick a waterproof sort of dressing or a Glad wrap, and then unwrap it and see if your arm's gone all red. So that's sort of the DIY method.
Okay, well, you could do that at home, no problem.
Yeah, now don't do that if we're thinking the full-on peanut allergy where you
become anaphylactic. Be good. Yeah.
We're talking about these, these delayed, ones. So that's the DIY.
And best method. To use your arm.
Your arm's quite a good place.
No need to go anywhere else, no.
No, just use your arm. And then if we discover it is a baby with a dairy allergy, there's a few things you can try. You could try a goat's milk formula. You could try a soy formula. There's a little bit of concern with boys and soy because it contains phytoestrogens, so maybe not. And then there's some commercial products. One's called Pepti Junior, and what they've done is they've taken the cow's milk protein, they've cut it up into little tiny pieces, so the immune system can't quite recognize it had anything to do with the cow. And then there's another one which is called Neocate, which is completely made from individual amino acids. So that's kind of the thing we might work through with the baby.
Is there any need to transition? I know it sort of kind of feels logical, but is there any need for once a baby or a young kid has been weaned off breast milk, is there any need to go to anything dairy? Or do you carry on with a milk type thing, you know?
So probably until 1 year of age, do you need to be using a formula, whether that's a cow's milk formula or a soy or a goat's, you know, there are some options there, but yes, you do.
And that's for protein.
Calories, protein, fats, vitamins, you know.
Right, gotcha.
You probably start, the earliest you would probably start solids is 4 months, but it's usually about 6 months that you start solids. So between 6 and 12 months, you do need to be using the formula as well.
I'm just curious, when is the human body actually able to deal with solids? Because obviously it's designed not to have them initially, right? I mean, that's part of the setup. But how early can you go? Not that I'm ever going to be in the position to, but I'm just curious, you know.
4 months is the earliest that people advocate. And when you think about the four-month-old baby, a lot of people will say when the child shows interest in the fact that you're eating.
Right.
But they're generally not consuming very much sort of from 4 to 6 months. They're just practicing, you know, so they're just sort of sticking stuff in their mouth and getting used to the concept. It's not generally providing a lot of calories until about 6 months where they're generally into it. And
do they naturally, though, I'm just trying to think back, you know, when I was going through that with kids, they kind of naturally want to go to solids at some point, don't they?
I think children are different. Some show a lot of interest in food early on and others are not. So whether you start at the 4-month end or the 6-month end, I think depends a little bit on the interest. Probably whether it's your first child or your sixth, probably you leave it to 6 months.
Well, you know the score pretty well by then, don't you? You kind of road tested everything by then. All right, sorry, I sort of diverted you again. How rare are problems with eggs? Is that a common one as well?
I think it's probably about number 3 after the dairy and the gluten.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what else have we got to talk about? Oh, omega 3-6 ratio, I think that's quite important, making sure that we've got lots of omega 3s and not too much of the omega 6. We also need to be avoiding sugar and avoiding the polyunsaturated fatty acids that I've spoken about a lot.
This is a familiar thing.
Yeah, this is your vegetable oils and your canola oil. And the reason is that sugar and the vegetable oils are both inflammatory. So if you're trying to avoid inflammation and that inflammation is manifesting on your skin as eczema, you don't want to be putting inflammatory oils and inflammatory sugar into your bowel. So I would be avoiding those things. And then there's a few things that might help. So some natural anti-inflammatories like zinc and possibly turmeric, quercetin and vitamin D. Those are all sort of supplements that you might consider.
Sorry, the difference between omega 3 and 6.
Yeah, so omega 3, they're your fish oils.
Yep.
And they're high in walnuts and high in flax seeds. They are anti-inflammatory.
Yep. Yep.
And your omega 6, which is in processed food, inflammatory. And the ratio is supposed to be of 3-6 is supposed to be about 1-4. And in modern society, it's about 1-20. It's way out of whack. So we've got a pro-inflammatory process, whereas we really want an anti-inflammatory process. So emphasize the 3s and de-emphasize the 6.
I've always been anti-inflammatory.
No, you haven't.
I'm anti it.
No, you're not.
No, it was like I'm anti this and I'm anti that. I'm anti-inflammatory as well. Okay, then. So I think you've talked about the test, the skin prick, and are there any more things to talk about in terms of testing?
Yeah, yes, there are. So there's a blood test you can do, which is called a RAST test. Can I remember what RAST stands for? No, I can't, but it's an acronym, right?
It's got to be.
And you can test for gluten and egg and dairy and soy and nuts in a blood test. So that's a good option. And then there's some functional medicine tests. And I love this test because the ones you can order through the funded testing, the skin prick test and the RAST test, only does IgE, which is the immediate reaction. But we can do an IgG delayed hypersensitivity test, and we can test for 96 different foods. And sometimes people are reacting to weird stuff like pineapple, you know, and you wouldn't pick that up just by guessing, or tomato, you know. So that's useful. So I like that test. Although all of these functional medicine tests are expensive, they get sent from an agent in the Hawke's Bay across the United States, probably in the region of $300, but really useful if you can't work it out.
Yeah. You could find out that you're having trouble with things that you didn't even know you were, right? Like, I mean, how often do people eat pineapples, for example, you know?
Yeah, and it's when you've got this leaky gut, when you do this IgG RAS test and there's 20 things, I know there's a leaky gut in that case because you shouldn't have that many things that you're reacting to. It should just be one or at most two. So that alerts me to the leaky gut and to know that I've got to heal the gut as well as ask people to remove those foods.
Is that a difficult thing to heal the gut?
It can take a little bit of work. You got to take out the foods which you're reacting to. Mm-hmm. You got to treat the dysbiosis or the bad bacteria. And there's a saying, it's weed, seed, feed. So you kind of got to kill off the bad guys. You've got to feed the seed. You got to put the probiotics and the probiotic foods. And then feed is give the foods like the sauerkraut and the fiber that the good bacteria like. So, you know, there's sometimes some herbal treatments you might throw in there as well.
Okay, and pharmaceutical fixes.
Yeah. So as you probably picked up, we want to deal with the cause of the problem and then we don't have to use the pharmaceuticals. But, you know, as always, they have a place. And, you know, if you think of that poor baby we were discussing earlier, you know, tearing itself apart, you know, got to deal with the symptoms. And emollients, the one that I really like, Aveeno, it's made from oatmeal. That seems to be one of the most soothing. The key with emollients is to use lots and lots of it. Steroid creams, you know, which again have a place, but if we can avoid using them, we should, but they certainly take the itch out. And then a few sort of other things to think about. When that skin is dry and open and cracked, it means that bacteria can get in. So you can get a staphylococcal bacterial infection, but sometimes the staphylococcus can colonize the skin without causing the obvious pus and redness. And bleach baths have a really good place. So it sounds a bit weird. So yes, I am talking about bleach. Now, I'm not talking about Janola. You want to use one of the home brand bleaches that doesn't have other stuff added to it. And for a full bath, a full adult bath, we're talking about half a cup of bleach, which creates about the same chlorine concentration as a swimming pool. And it will kill the staph on the skin, which sometimes is what's causing the inflammation. So that can be helpful. If it's a baby's bath, it's about 30 mils. So, you know, what's that, a couple of dessert spoons, isn't it?
You can measure that out, yeah.
And then also to just think about the other lifestyle medicines, things we talk about, stress definitely flares up eczema without a doubt. In fact, my mum was telling me when she was a first-year teacher, her eczema flared up dramatically, and we all know that teaching full stop is stressful, but first year definitely. And then sleep. It's really important to get adequate sleep. So if you're not sleeping because you're itchy, then yeah. So there we go. That's sort of eczema.
Okay. Well, that was really interesting. I feel like I know a whole lot more about that now. In fact, I wish I knew about that when, you know, one of our kids was having a few issues with it back in the day because it was a bit uncomfortable for her. Of course, we did the regular thing and go to the doctor and get the steroid cream. And yeah, that's what we did back then. And that was over 20 years ago. So, all right. Well, thanks, Glenn Davies from reversalnz.co.nz. Another health hacks there. What are we going to do next week?
So, well, I'm not sure exactly of the order, but we're going to have some other guests coming on at some point. We're going to get some absolute experts in their field. We've still got a little bit of organising to do, but I'm hoping that we're going to have an ophthalmologist on soon to talk about glaucoma and macular degeneration, but to look at these from a holistic or functional medicine point of view.
Yeah.
And then I also want to get our women's health expert in as well, because I really want to explore more this issue of perimenopause and menopause. But we don't want to forget the men. You know, there's menopause as well. So
is there really?
Yeah, testosterone levels drop. So
okay, is that what that is there? Right.
Yeah. So Let's we've still got a little bit of back
well,
room.
Well, let's see how that shakes out, but that's kind of what we'll be doing in the next few weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you don't hear from me next, you'll be hearing from someone far more educated and far more eloquent than myself.
Oh, come on. and you will be back. So that's the other thing. All right, Glenn, good to chat again, and let's see what happens next week.
Okay, thanks, Paul.
RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.